the support of frontline African states to support an effective resistance against the apartheid regime. He noted that Arab countries must adopt a similar position and shoulder their responsibility. The conference also heard that Mandela himself was called a terrorist when he resisted oppression.
He also raised arms for the African National Congress. We therefore call on each and everyone in this conference to ensure that you adopt Nelson Mandela's way. Go to your countries, mobilize resources, mobilize arms for the Palestinian resistance to effectively wage their struggle so that we can defeat the brutal apartheid regime of Israel.
Attended by a spectrum of movements from around the world, the conference considered the role of all spheres of society in activating awareness. In South Africa, for example, women and youth proved cornerstones of the resistance, often paving the way. But their cries and resolute steadfastness were heard and seen, which resulted in a global mobilization to act. Something participants say Arab countries have failed so far.
When I talk to you, I talk more in pain than in anger. We would have expected some Islamic countries who would say that they support the Palestinian cause to cut relations with the Israelis, as did South Africa, who is not an Islamic, not an Arabic country. Why they don't cut the relations with the Israelis? Why they continue to have trade with the Israelis up till now? Why? If they really have a position to say, to tell us, our people, go and make actions, we don't want to hear words.
South Africa's former intelligence minister, Ronnie Castrels, described America as the number one enemy of humanity and the key player behind the genocide in Gaza. To overcome Israel, therefore, is to confront the colonial project, racism and oppression. The discussion panels held at the conference focused on three critical areas: civil society, media, and the international system. If used correctly, these domains can ensure that accurate information is conveyed and pressure is applied, leading to international bodies being able to take action to prosecute those guilty of atrocities in Palestine. Hassan Siriep, Johannesburg.
The northwestern tribal regions of Pakistan, known for their strong community bonds and historical resistance, witnessed an outpouring of support for the people of Palestine. Many rallies saw participants hailing from diverse backgrounds within the region, transcending ethnic and cultural differences to stand in unity with the Palestinian cause.
From north to south, Pakistanis stand with the people of Palestine. This is the land of people who always stand with the oppressed. The war on Gaza has exposed the real face of Israel and its top supporter, the U.S. This genocide has proved that Israel is a cruel and illegitimate regime.
Protesters urge the global community to take a stand against the indiscriminate bombing of Gaza, the displacement of families, and the overall human rights abuses inflicted upon the Palestinian nation.
Right and wrong ki jang keh raha hun.
This is a battle of right versus wrong. People of the world are standing with the oppressed people of Palestine. But leaders of the Arab Islamic states are silent and siding with the U.S., which I believe is against humanity.
Local leaders, activists, and religious figures address the crowds, emphasizing the need for international intervention to halt the violence and hold Israel accountable for its actions in Gaza.
They are declaring their support for innocent Palestinians. They are declaring that Israel is committing the war crimes. Israel is committing a genocide in the Gaza. And what is happening is there. We cannot stay aloof from that. We are the part of not only humanitarian grounds, but we are part of an Islamic community. We are part of the Palestinian cause.
The multifaceted response from Pakistan by blending public demonstrations and economic actions against Israel's atrocities in Gaza highlights the deeply rooted emotional connection that many Pakistanis feel with the Palestinian struggle for self-determination. Nasir Kazmi, Kohar District of Northwestern Pakistan.
Hundreds of protesters amassed outside of the White House over the weekend.
Plain and simple, it's a genocide. Over 20,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli bombs.
And protesters are concerned that the numbers of the dead will grow. They railed against the recent Israeli offensive against Palestinians in Gaza, crowding Lafayette Park and surrounding areas.
I think every day about the children in jail. They're the children in indefinite detention who don't get trials, who can't talk to their parents. That is probably the thing that breaks my heart the most.
The demonstration comes after a temporary ceasefire ended and the Israeli military resumed its ground operations against Gazans.
The White House has become a constant backdrop for those who are upset over the constant bombardment over Gaza as the death toll rises. Protesters say there are many who are conflating Zionism with Judaism, but they say there's a major difference, and they're urging President Biden to change his relationship with Israeli leaders.
Directly in front of the White House, others gathered for a die-in, lying on the ground, pretending to be dead, calling attention to the thousands of lives lost in Gaza.
We actually are massively proud and happy of the fact that we have so many Jewish Americans that have been joining us, including many that are laying their bodies on the ground right now behind me.
Health Ministry officials in Gaza report that Israeli attacks have killed more than 15,000 Palestinians in Gaza since the beginning of October. Over 190 Palestinians have died since a truce expired on Friday.
And literally, we've had politicians in front of the Capitol the other day tell me, well, they deserved it. I turned around to one of the congressmen and I said, how did a one-year-old child deserve it? And he literally shrugged his shoulders and walked off.
Demonstrators say they'll continue to protest over what they call U.S. support for war and global conflict. This is sure to be an issue for voters in 2024 and Biden's re-election bid. Colin Campbell, Washington.
With the participation of Palestinian Scout Associations and children under 16 years old, Palestinian resistance factions organized a rally this Saturday in front of the UNICEF headquarters in Damascus to show solidarity with the children in Gaza. This after the representatives of international organization refused to accept the children's letter, pushing them to publicize their message instead.
The Israeli army deliberately bombed hospitals, including Al-Ahli, Al-Shifa, Al-Quds, and the Indonesian. All the hospitals were put out of service because of the Israeli and American warplanes that kill and mutilate bodies.
We demand UNICEF to fulfill its responsibilities in helping protect civilian infrastructure, such as schools, hospitals, and water stations, and to ensure the provision of basic medical and food supplies for Gaza's children.
The children staged a performance on the massacres committed by the Israeli regime against kids in Palestine. They also chanted slogans and carried banners condemning war crimes committed against children and demanded the removal of the blockade imposed on Gaza.
Palestinian children amidst the rubble remain steadfast in the path of resistance. We will not surrender and will only bow before God. The Palestinian child fully understands that resistance is the only and optimal choice for the liberation of Palestine.
We are here to support the children of Gaza, and we call on the United Nations to support them, provide milk to them, and to help us stop attacks on hospitals and schools as they are safe zones for children.
The children affirmed that future generations will increasingly embrace resistance as the sole path to reclaim their occupied lands and to restore their legitimate rights, especially after they have witnessed the total failure of the international community to stop the bloodshed in Gaza.
Every child in the world must have access to medical care, clean water, healthy food, and a safe environment. But the children of Gaza don't even know if they will live to see another day. Yet, with innocence and resilience, they resist the Israeli tyranny. Ibrahim Wahdib, Damascus.
Dom. dubbed Earth and Freedom, the latest demonstration in support of the people of Gaza was staged in Rome's northern suburb of Monte Sacro on Friday. The initiative, organized by a string of groups including the Student Collective for Palestine, the anti-Zionist movement in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and some housing movements, took place as Israel resumed air raids in Gaza after a seven-day pause in fighting.
Students from across Italy have been rallying in support of Palestinians because they are aware of the ongoing genocide in Gaza, the largest open-air concentration camp in the world. Meanwhile, the whole of the international community stays silent.
As bombardments have resumed in Gaza, we are trying to organize as many initiatives as possible in support of the Palestinians. Today, we are also calling on Carrefour to end its complicity in Israel's slaughtering of Gazans.
Also on Friday, the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement launched the Boycott Carrefour campaign, calling on supporters of Palestinian rights in Italy to boycott the international supermarket chain Carrefour. The multinational retailer has been often accused of supporting Israel's illegal settlement activities in the West Bank, and it has been described by some activists as, quote, a genocide facilitator.
The West must stop the Zionists if it really intends to help the Jews. Only a Zionist sick mind can call Palestinians human animals. A language which incites genocidal actions. It's time to drop the policy of controlled chaos in the Middle East.
The war has killed more than 15,500 Palestinians so far, including at least 6,150 children. Due to Israeli bombardment, about 60% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed, while at least 50,000 families are now homeless.
Hundreds of demonstrations have taken place in solidarity with Palestinians in Italy since October 7, and more will be held in upcoming days in different Italian cities, including Turin, Genoa, and Oristano. Max Civili, Rome.
Crowds of Yemeni protesters rallied in the streets of the capital Sana'a, reaffirming their staunch support for Palestinians against the Israeli occupying enemy.
The masses of Yemeni people who came out today confirm the continuation of our full support for our brothers in Palestine. This includes the distant efforts until the liberation of Palestine and the eradication of the Zionist enemy.
Protesters also expressed their readiness to support the Palestinians at all costs, and provide the Palestinian resistance with money and men until decisive victory over the Israeli regime is achieved.
The people came out today like a flood to confirm that we are returning to the war with the Zionist entity. We are also here to direct a message to the Zionist enemy that its return to the war means that the end of its existence, the end of this entity, and the end of this enemy.
According to Yemeni military officials, Yemen is expecting that the U.S. and other Western powers would try to take advantage of the Red Sea. The officials have warned that any act of hostility by Israel or the United States will be met with unprecedented force.
We already knew that the U.S. would try to move in on us from the Red Sea, and for that we have prepared tremendously. We have prepared for them in a number of locations and in a number of fields. Our armed forces are prepared. Our Navy forces are prepared.
The U.S. Department of Defense has sent several warnings to Ansar Allah movement not to get involved in tensions in Palestine amid a brutal Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. However, as the leader of Ansar Allah, Abdel Malik al-Houthi, stated, Yemen is not the nation that takes its orders from the U.S.
The resumption of Israeli airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip means the Yemeni army will resume its military efforts against the Israeli regime by launching drones and ballistic missiles against the Israeli entity. This also includes the capture or seizure of any Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
The ongoing boycott campaign against pro-Israeli products has set in motion a transformative period for Western businesses in Pakistan. Faced with a resounding call for boycott, pro-US and pro-Israeli companies find themselves compelled to make strategic adjustments. In response, these outlets have slashed their product prices by up to 50%, a desperate measure to bring customers back to their shops. However, the people of Pakistan remain steadfast in their commitment to uphold the boycott as a demonstration of solidarity with the oppressed communities in Gaza.
I am fully behind the boycott against pro-US and pro-Israeli companies. It's heartbreaking to witness the ongoing war crimes in Gaza, and it's time we use our consumer power to send a strong message.
Boycotting is our way of expressing solidarity with the innocent lives affected by the war on Gaza. These pro-Israeli and pro-US companies must understand that we won't support businesses linked to such atrocities. It's time to prioritize humanity over profit.
The people of Pakistan vowed to continue their boycott campaign till the complete ceasefire in Gaza.
These companies need to be held accountable for their affiliations with the US and Israel, and our collective stand can make a real difference.
The boycott has cast a shadow over the sales of superstores selling Western products in Pakistan, prompting a strategic shift in their offerings, giving more prominence to locally sourced items.
In response to intense boycott pressure, pro-Israeli companies are offering substantial discounts as a strategic move to regain customer trust after aligning with the US and Israel. This shows the complex interactions between geopolitical developments, consumer behavior, and national socio-political structures. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
Two months into Israel's ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza, more than 16,000 people dead, 70% of them women and children, more than half of the buildings razed, infrastructure in ruins, a few hospitals with inadequate facilities hardly operating. And that means all the four internationally known crimes have been committed in Gaza in the past 2 months. Genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the crime of aggression. Iran and some other countries are calling for perpetrators to be brought to justice. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in this edition of the program. Zakir Ahmed Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst in Johannesburg. And Daniel Shah, academic and political commentator, who's joining us out of New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right, welcome to the show, gentlemen. Let me start with Zakir. Zakir, you're a lawyer, so Iranian foreign minister, others also world leaders are calling for perpetrators to be brought to justice. Some of them are saying that the Israeli war criminals, of course, you know, they have committed all crimes. They should be taken to the International Criminal Court. So tell us what measures are necessary to be taken for this to happen.
Well, there needs to be a referral by the Palestinian state. The problem right now is that there are pending dockets at the ICC. Fatou Bin Souda, the previous prosecutor, had presided over whether or not Palestine could, in fact, lodge a complaint, and the determination, the preliminary determinations were that indeed Palestine could move forward. However, there is a duplicitous role that has been played by the Palestinian Authority. Part of the Oslo agreement would be that it would subject itself to the laws of Israel and would abandon international law mechanisms. And the Palestinian Authority, and it's quite clear in the literature, that they have been reluctant to renege on the undertakings of Oslo. This has become the highly problematic and controversial aspect within the international law framework. However, the best option, and this has been utilized and explored by South African legal minds, and there has been an aspect of warfare, is to apply something called universal jurisdiction, where a government can exercise its own jurisdiction to prosecute individuals that have deemed to commit international crimes, such as crimes against humanity, war crimes, genocide, the likes that we are seeing today, and charge them in terms of local jurisdictions. That's the more practical approach, because the ICC has just become ineffective. We've seen how they've dragged their feet with regards to the United States, with regards to Israel, with regards to Great Britain, and they have found it extremely easy to move on issues of Ukraine and Russia. We see the double standard, and therefore it comes down to individual states to hold Israel and its supporters accountable.
Okay. Now, Daniel, in your opinion, what does it take for Israeli criminals, and of course their American and maybe European accomplices, to be brought to justice?
I have absolutely zero faith in the United Nations or the International Criminal Court. These bodies have never done anything to stop U.S. aggressions and military interventions across the world, from Panama to Iraq, from Libya to Syria to Grenada, and on and on. We're trying to educate the people here in the U.S. I really, at a moral level, at a personal level, at a spiritual level, I don't understand. Many of my colleagues, friends, neighbors, family members, when have we seen over 70 journalists murdered so far? Over 105 UN workers murdered in Gaza as well. 1.5 million people displaced in a tiny ghetto that continues to be carpet bombed. This is not a political issue. This is a human issue. But many people here are so afraid because we are attacked and we're doxxed and we're threatened. And they say that we're anti-Semitic and we're anti-Jewish just because we stand up against a genocide, against a Holocaust of human life. 1.1 million children, have they had access in the past 59 days to water, to clean water, to electricity, to this is David versus genocidal Goliath. I personally am at a loss to explain how U.S. society continues to allow this to happen.
Right. And Zakir, let's get down to some legal details. What's the punishment for such crimes, for war crimes being committed, for crimes against humanity? Crime of aggression, genocide,
so
all the four crimes.
The crimes the crimes are not in tandem with the punishment. The punishment is long-term imprisonment. We have seen sentences handed down between 5 to 20 years. I think the maximum that we've seen is approximately 30 years. But as Mr. Shaw correctly states, we are watching a genocide take place. We are truly witnessing the extermination of an entire population that is being live-streamed. And the punishment of 5, 10, 15 years for the lives that are being extinguished is not commensurate. Therefore, there needs to be a reconsideration of the global structure. And I think Mr. Shaw has rightly stated this. is that the world has seen that these international mechanisms have been ineffective. They have not been a buffer to the aggressions that have been meted out by global powers, and they have definitely not been a buffer to the aggressions meted out towards the Palestinians by Israel. So, yes, this is the legal perspective. However, I believe that we are sitting at a different crossroads now, where the Global South has indicated that they are very uncomfortable with the current status quo. South Africa has been one of the countries that has officially expressed it through our Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor and the African Union, and they have indicated that there needs to be a restructuring of the entire global system. The veto power has clearly been abused to protect the genocide of Israel by the United States, that has been the big brother protecting Israel from all forms of condemnation and international accountability, and this cannot continue, this cannot persist.
Right. Danielle, we had this report by Amnesty International today saying that U.S. made weapons killed 19 kids, 14 women, and 10 men in Israeli attack on two homes. This is only one instance, of course. It was in Wadi Gaza on October 13th, and this amounts clearly to war crimes. So where are those Western leaders on top of the Americans who are always bragging about human rights and all that jazz?
That's exactly what it is, all that jazz, all that rhetoric, all that propaganda against China, against Russia, against Iran, against Venezuela. But who are the true murderers? Who are the true genocidaires? Who are the true human rights abusers? And when we try to raise our voices here in the West, here in the belly of the beast, we are censored, we are threatened. Our Twitter accounts are shut down. We're shadow banned. We're at a loss. We're in the streets every day trying to tap into what humanity is left here in the United States. We wake up with an anxiety, with a genocidal anxiety, and the South African lawyer has laid out the legal basis to prosecute all of these war criminals, from Herzog to Netanyahu to Joe Biden to Lloyd Austin to Anthony Blinken, in the role of CNN, in the role of MSNBC, never mind the right wing in Fox, who do everything they can to cheer on this holocaust of human life. So we're up against a very, very powerful enemy. And I think it's revealing to the world just how sick, just how genocidally sick U.S. capitalism and their bastard offspring Zionism, which they have weaponized now for 75 years to do their bidding in the Middle East, because this violence is not just against 2.3 civilians in the Gaza Strip, in this tiny ghetto. Every day, whenever they want to, they strike Iraq, they strike Syria, they strike Lebanon. Zionism and their U.S. backers, they have a carte blanche to do whatever they want in the Middle East. So we're pleading with all of humanity, how can we stop this genocidal madness?
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now, Zakir, UNICEF also saying, of course, they're good at giving reports, at least. They're not able to take any action, but they're condemning this, and they're also sometimes reflecting some facts, like UNICEF saying that safe zones that Americans are thanking Israeli forces for recently, because for giving warning to move to other places, to safe zones. Okay, safe zones, UNICEF is saying, in their own words, they're not scientific. They're not rational. They're not possible. There is no place which is safe. Where should the people in Gaza go?
The idea of a safe zone, safe corridors, is a complete fantasy. There has been clear footage that has indicated that the alleged safe corridor along Salah Ad-Din Road, the main road within Gaza, has been targeted numerous times by Israeli snipers and tank fire. The attempt to portray safe zones or United Nations facilities, UNRWA facilities within Gaza as places of safety and security have been rubbished when we look at the number of strikes. Dr. Mads Gilbert, the Norwegian doctor, was on tour in South Africa and provided a shocking statistic that 47% of those that were killed in the south, the alleged safe zone. What is happening is a propaganda game that is played with the United States. We've noticed it. A very clear pattern that has developed. Every time Anthony Blinken enters the region, you have an escalation, an increase in ferocity, and a change in weaponry that results in the dismemberment, the death, and the permanent disability of the Palestinian people on scales that we have not seen before. So this is just a fantasy. Yes, there is no safe place in Gaza. There was an old human rights report that indicated the same thing with the same title, no safe place. This is a tactic of Israel. Only this time, Israel has been given carte blanche to proceed and exterminate the entire Palestinian population. We have been in contact with the leadership that has been visiting South Africa, both Hamas, Hezbollah, Jihad, and they have all said the same thing, that we are heading towards the situation of a complete eradication of the population of Gaza. And this will lead to a regional war, and not just a regional war, but a global war. This is highly problematic, and this is exactly what it is, propaganda, and it's being exposed on a daily basis by media houses such as yourselves, Press TV, and the alternative press.
Right. Now, Daniel, international organizations, rights bodies, including Doctors Without Borders, WHO, they're calling for something obvious, for protection of civilians, medical staff, journalists, and of course they're warning against forced displacement of the people. What could justify the killing of these people? Journalists, doctors, nurses, paramedics?
There's absolutely no justification. All of these humanitarian organizations for 59 days straight have been warning that this is a genocide that we're watching in slow motion, an accelerated genocide. I mean, all we hear about here in the West is October 7th, Hamas. Now they're using all of the colonial, anti-Arab tropes that Hamas are rapists. They presented basically very little concrete proof. Yet we hear from the Palestinians who are being released from Israeli prisons that they have endured sexual abuse. Certainly, a huge part of war is the informational war, the media war. But here, in the belly of the beast, in the United States, who owns CNN? Who owns the New York Times? Who owns MSNBC? Who owns Breitbart News? Who owns the full gamut of corporate media outlets? So we don't have a way of reaching people. If this is not censorship, what is it? If this is not fascism, what is it? But the whole world is watching. How could any citizen of the world, the 8 billion people of the world, from Nigeria to the Philippines to Algeria to the Middle East to South America, who can very plainly see this is David, who only has a slingshot in the bricks and stones from the rubble that has crumbled down on his head, on the heads of how many tens of thousands of children, to say that 16,000 or 17,000 Palestinians are dead is ridiculous. There's not one hospital that's been left functioning or standing. It's very clear to anyone who studied any amount of history that the Zionist plot, the Israeli plot, is the extinction. It's the extermination of all life in Gaza so they can expand greater Israel. And why aren't our people speaking out about this? What does it take to tap into the humanity of people in the United States?
Exactly. And Zakir, Gaza is being wiped off the map, practically. So what's the purpose of Israel's scorched earth policy? Do you agree with what Daniel said?
Yes, definitely. I think we are traveling in the same direction in both our thoughts and our emotions. The principle of Israel is that of ethnic superiority. The only way that Israel can establish that is to eliminate the Palestinian population. The ethnic superiority principle is based on demographic control. And by eliminating the Gazan population, that is why you see the graffiti that is being sprayed by Israeli soldiers. We are returning to Gaza. We are going to re-establish Gush Katif. These are the types of genocidal messages that are being shared. The attempt right now is to push the Palestinian people into the Sinai, trying to bribe Egyptian authorities and the Egyptian leadership by wiping out its debt. I think it's about $160 billion. There's attempts to do the same with Turkey, $400 billion. And this is to buy their silence and to buy their consent. This will not be allowed. And I think this is the problem in the analysis. This will not be allowed by Al-Muqawama al-Islamiyah, the resistance axis. It will not be allowed by Hezbollah. It will not be allowed by Ansar Allah. It will not be allowed from the brothers of the PMU, Popular Mobilization Unit. And I highly doubt that the Islamic Republic of Iran will remain silent on this and remain on the sidelines. Yes, they haven't been on the front line of the attacks. Ansar Allah, Hezbollah has been, PMU has done what they had to do. And I think that it will inevitably draw the entire region into a massive war. Okay. And yes, already we are sitting on a global war scale. The United States, the UK, Germany, France, everyone is part of the war at the moment. So okay. I think that's the direction we're going to head
Zakir,
in.
That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Zakir Ahmadmayat, attorney, activist, and political analyst in Johannesburg, Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator in New York.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله
The limelight.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has noted that Western countries, which previously insisted that Ukraine should defeat Russia on the battlefield, are now gradually changing their position. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. Western officials are engaged in behind-the-scenes talks with Kiev about potential peace negotiations with Russia, trying to find out what concessions Ukraine might have agreed to in order to end the conflict. Several U.S. officials familiar with the matter reportedly described the discussions, which took place during recent meeting of more than 50 nations back in Kiev, as delicate. According to the report, the talks were driven by growing fears among Western officials that the conflict between Kiev and Moscow has reached a stalemate. Western countries are also said to be concerned that Ukraine is running out of forces and about their own ability to continue providing aid to Kiev. Two NBC News sources said the U.S. President Joe Biden has been particularly focused on Ukraine's manpower issues, with one official stating that while the West can provide Kiev with weapons, if they don't have competent forces to use them, it doesn't do a lot of good. Another major concern is the conflict between Hamas and the Zionist regime of Israel, which has drawn attention away from the war between Russia and Ukraine, potentially making new aid packages more difficult. When it comes to the situation on the battlefield, some U.S. officials reportedly described it as a war of inches, suggesting that the outcome of the conflict will hinge on how long each side can maintain a capable standing army. NBC News' sources also privately warned that Ukraine may only have several months before more urgent discussions about peace negotiations should begin. Meanwhile, some Western officials reportedly suggested that as an incentive to consider talks with Russia, NATO could offer Ukraine some security guarantees short of formal accession to the organization. Publicly, President Biden has said that Washington would not engage in any talks on the Ukraine conflict unless Kiev wants to. However, while Moscow has never closed the door to negotiations with Kiev, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a decree last year banning all agreements with Russia after four former Ukrainian regions overwhelmingly voted to join the country. Reported fears about Ukraine's dwindling military potential come amid Kiev's counteroffensive, which started in early June but has failed to gain any substantial ground. Russia Today, the RT network, has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Vladimir Putin noted on Friday, 3rd of November, that Western countries, which previously insisted that Ukraine should defeat Russia on the battlefield, are now gradually changing their position. The Russian president told members of the Civic Chamber, a civil society body tasked with consulting the government on policymaking. He said, "They're changing their tune now, saying different things." President Putin argued that the nation should become stronger in all aspects, including the economy, military, and political stability. Such strength deters hostile actors from trying to isolate Russia. He noted, "The European Union nations excluded our energy. So what? What is the result? Our gross domestic product, or GDP, will grow up to 3% this year, and the leading European economies are shrinking." President Putin added, "They suffer, they have real problems," noting that he was saying this without joy. President Putin added, "This doesn't mean that we should behave aggressively. It means we must be sovereign in every sense of the word." The United States and its allies have accused Russia of launching an unprovoked attack on Ukraine last year and have pledged to support Kiev for as long as it takes to defeat Moscow. Washington has stated its goal in Ukraine is to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. Moscow says its operations in Ukraine were caused by Western refusal to address Russia's concerns about NATO expansion and Kiev's discriminatory policies against Russian speakers after the 2014 armed coup d'etat. The U.S. stopped the Ukrainian government from striking a truce in the first weeks of the ongoing conflict, which would have made it a neutral nation. Kiev has declared that the only outcome it would accept is to push Russia out of all of the territories that it claims as its own, including Crimea. It has failed to secure any significant gains on the front line during the so-called summer counteroffensive this year. Sputnik News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said Kiev's attempts to advance on the front line remain fruitless and are resulting in high battlefield losses and decreasing morale among Ukrainian troops. The Russian Defense Minister said during a governmental meeting recently, despite the supply of new kinds of NATO weapons, the regime in Kiev is losing the war. The Russian forces keep conducting active defense, effectively inflicting damage. Sergei Shoigu specifically highlighted the successes of Russian air defense troops, praising them for delivering 1,400 successful intercepts of Ukrainian assets last month. He said the downed targets included 37 planes and 6 ATAC-MS tactical battlefield missiles. The U.S. provided the latter capability earlier in October after months of requests by the Ukrainian government. The Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu compared the number of downed Ukrainian planes with the number of F-16s that had been promised to Ukraine by Western donors. He noted the pledged fleet of aircraft would require Russia roughly 20 days to destroy at the rate demonstrated recently. Western governments have vowed to support Ukraine for as long as it takes to defeat Russia on the battlefield, but their ability to deliver on their promise remains in question. The conflict in West Asia, which erupted recently and caused a surge in demand for weapons by the Israeli regime, has further weakened Kiev's ability to secure Western aid and assistance. Ukraine aid has become a point of contention in the opposition-majority U.S. House of Representatives. Newly appointed GOP Speaker Mike Johnson recently rejected a White House proposal to bundle together spending on several security goals, including Ukraine. A bill he put to the floor in the House recently proposes a separate $14.3 billion package for the Israeli regime. However, U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to veto that bill. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. According to a new opinion poll, American support for Ukraine amid its war with Russia has significantly fallen. Survey results released recently by Gallup show 41% of the American public believe the U.S. government is doing too much to help Ukraine. This marks a 12% increase since the survey was last conducted in June. A third of respondents said they believe the United States was doing the right amount, down from 43% in June, and roughly a quarter of those polled said they thought the U.S. wasn't doing enough. When broken down by political party, Republicans and independents were less likely to support continued assistance for Ukraine. According to the Gallup opinion poll, roughly 62% of Republicans and 44% of independents say the U.S. is doing too much for Ukraine. More Americans are also likely to support the U.S. helping to end the war quickly than when the survey was first administered in August of 2022. 54% of respondents maintain the U.S. should help Ukraine reclaim its former territory, down from 66%. and 43% said the United States should try to help end the war, even if it means ceding territory to Russia. Asked how long the U.S. should provide funding to Ukraine, more than 60% of those who took part in the survey said it should have limits. 37% of Americans, mostly Democrats, said they believe the United States should continue to provide aid as long as Ukraine requests it. The survey responses mirror the sentiments found in other surveys. According to a recent Reuters news agency Ipsos opinion poll, Americans are also less likely to say the U.S. should provide weaponry to Ukraine than they were over the summer months.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.